Monday, March 21st. I had breakfast with Lennon about 9. His room is like a staff meeting for about 2 hours each morning. It's very hard to find time for a personal talk. And then, because it's a day when the public is not here, and because the sun was shining bright, I went down with Mr. West and Mr. Ketchum to the state dining room to look at the lovely fabrics for the drapes and for the chairs and the two drawings Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Brown of the Macmillan Company had left. I want to make up my own mind which I really like best. But what Mr. DuPont says to me when I see him in April will have a lot of bearing. Bess was on the first floor walking through the paces with Sylvia Symington. I think Jimmy and Sylvia will be wonderful in the protocol job. But I am sad at Lloyd and Anne leaving, and I feel that I did not do all I could to incorporate them into our family. I was work at my desk with the mail, signing a picture for Zephyr's birthday. The 23rd or 24th when she's been with us, meeting Liz Carpenter's brother. And then downstairs to have my picture with Mrs. Alice Roosevelt Longworth and Russell Train, receiving an album of pictures of wildlife in Africa. This for publicity for the movie Born Free, premiere to benefit the wildlife organization. I asked Mrs. Longworth and Judge Train to come upstairs and have tea with me. It was an extraordinary hour. She's one of the most vivid people I've ever known, also rather frightening. She told a story about Bobby Kennedy being like the macaw parrot, at least in her fast staccato voice. That was what I understood the bird to be. This bird, gentle-natured for centuries, would land on the back of a sheep, pluck out a little tuft of wool to help make its nest. And then one day some macaw parrot plucked too deep and tasted blood, developed an addiction to it, and from then on macaw parrot would light on the back of sheep, disembowel them, so she expressed it, and leave them to die. It was a quite horrible story. She said she had told it to Bobby himself. I had no comment whatsoever, and hope she does not supply me with one. Then she was very interested about Linda Bird. There are so many quotable things to say about Linda Bird, and so few that I feel I want to quote. To be properly discreet is to be very dull indeed. Mrs. Longworth said that she'd seen in the paper that Linda Bird had gone to church with George and his mother at the Christian Scientist Church. I said yes. We all laughed at the rather diverse religious interests in the lives of the Johnson family. Russell Train said pleasantly that we were being quite ecumenical. Mrs. Longworth said, rather more picturesquely, all the way from the Virgin Mary to Mary Baker Eddy. We reminisced about the White House. Russell Train's father had been naval aide to President Hoover. There had been a time when he was 10 years old, when he had spent a night here. Once more it was borne in on me how much such a thing means to even the most sophisticated. That must have been nearly 40 years ago, and it still matters. As always, I walk downstairs with Mrs. Longworth to say goodbye. I want to give every measure of respect to her. In so many ways, I admire her. The nicest thing is that she seems to truly like Lyndon. While we were having tea, he strode in, clad amazingly, in a tie silk dressing gown, a plaid that outdid Joseph's cloak for its wild colors, but barely covered his knees. He's one of those rare people who meets her on her own terms. I think she recognizes in him a fellow spirit, and he always talks with her as though she were the only person in the room, or certainly the most important. The next little segment of my day was with Susan's beau, Gary Soldati, a Scotch in the Queen's room. In a half hour or so of talking about Susan, he kept on repeating the words, "She's so kind, she's so honest, he seems genuinely devoted." He did not, however, ever tell me he'd ask her to marry him, nor did he specify any time at which he was going to try to see her. He graduates from dental school in June, but there are ahead the years of interning and specializing in orthodontist work. He was a very nice, personable young man. I liked him. He had studied for the priesthood a couple of years, then decided it was not for him and had gotten out. And I think perhaps it is his yearning to do something for somebody that draws him to Susan. It was his birthday, he was delighted to be here, and I feel that at least I'm doing a little something for Susan, investing with him, and I feel guilty that I am not doing more. Then I dressed quickly and went over to the State Department for a small dinner that was given by the busiest man in town, Secretary of State Rusk, and Secretary and Mrs. Rusk, for the 15 White House fellows and their wives. I stayed just for a drink with them, managed to meet all the fellows, talked with as many as I could. They have quite a little enclave of their own, and I think if there's one thing they've learned up here, it's that public servants work hard and keep no regular hours. That is, those at the top. Back at the White House, I found that Adam A. Kane had arrived. Jim is returning from Vietnam tonight, and with him Earl Rudder. Adam and I went downstairs to look once more at the drapery fabrics of the state dining room in the night lights, those in the main entrance hall. I want to see them under all possible circumstances. I want this to be a good choice for the next 15 years.